This is a podcast from ABC Overnights. Here's Michael Pavlich.
Dan Golding is the presenter of Screen Sounds on ABC Classic FM, and he's also the Senior Lecturer in Media and Communications at Swinburne University. He's a bit of a Mancini fan as well. Good morning, Dan.
Morning, Michael. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
How about that song, eh?
Oh, it's, one of a kind, really. It's just such a beautiful, beautiful ballad. I mean, for a great film as well, which certainly helped us success, but, you know, you can't help but feel that it would have been a famous tune, even if the film had been rubbish. It's just such a wonderful song.
Oh, there's something about the melodies, the melody quote, it's just, it just sucks you in, draws you in, and then add to that a singer like Perry Como or Andy Williams, and the way they're able to croon it, it's just a magic piece of music, really.
Oh, no, absolutely. You know, I got to say, actually, in all the way back, casting my own mind back to high school, I used that song as a musical mnemonic to remember the largest gap, what it sounds like between two notes before you hit, technically speaking, an octave. So I think that's one of the reasons why that melody is so unique. There's very few songs that use that. Such a wide gap, and it helps with those crooners. It's just so beautiful.
Try and explain that to us for a second. So that what you're saying is a gap between notes?
Yeah, that's right. So when he goes, and I'm apologising, I'm about to sing because there's no other way to explain this. When he goes, those two notes, that is, this is really technical now.
It's very difficult to sing.
Yeah, very, very difficult to sing. It's one of those. It's an interval gap between two notes. It's almost like the people talk about the American national anthem as being another really difficult one to sing because it's got all sorts of really high leaps and jumps between notes that are very far apart. And that's quite similar with Moon River, but it's a ballad. It's a love tune, and I think there's something to that the notes are all sort of unusual, memorable leaps apart. It just allows the crooners to really get all the emotion out of that melody.
It's almost the ultimate crooner song, that one, isn't it? Now, you mentioned Breakfast at Tiffany's, of course, which that song came from. In my research, it turned up a rather surprised detail that Mancini actually when he started out working for Universal, he wrote the music for The Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Yeah, that's right. And this was when he was not really well known at all the way back in 1954. Breakfast at Tiffany's was 61 when he was a bit more famous. And he was just kind of a musical arranger out of the army band. And he joined the Universal Music Department, and they, immediately put him on these B-grade
horror movies.
And Creature from the Black Lagoon, I think, is one of those ones that has stuck in the memory now. But at the time, I mean, I think nobody expected it to be
still around 2020.
Yeah,
but it is,
exactly.
You're right, it took on this sort of cult dimension, didn't it? Maybe one of the things that actually kept it in place was the fact that the music soundtrack is actually pretty strong, and you can hear Mancini's talent already coming through. In fact, it's probably the best thing about the movie.
Yeah, that and the amazing fish costume the creature wears.
Of course. It wasn't just that one. He did a whole lot of these B-grade movies when he first started out. He did that one, which, of course, we're all familiar with, but there were a whole lot of the similar sort of movies that he worked on.
That's right.
The Creature Walks Amongst Us. It Came From Outer Space. Tarantula. This Island Earth. So.
Yep, that's right. And I mean, Universal, of course, was known as the sort of the monster movie company, because since the 1930s, they'd done Frankenstein, Dracula, The Invisible Man, The Wolfman. And so they were, back in the day, film studios they had their own discrete identity. Some of them were known for doing big celebrity films. They were doing romances, and Universal was the monster movie studio. So I guess he probably knew at least a little bit of a hint of what he was getting into when he joined their music department in 1952, but, you know, just such a wonderful slew of classic B-grade monster movies that you mentioned there, yeah.
And then, from jumping from that, he went to TV, basically wrote a TV theme, and that was where he cracked it, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Peter Gunn. It was just what a theme. It was really pioneering because Peter Gunn was kind of it was a detective show, and very much within the kind of setting of film noir, I suppose. But you know, everybody, when you think of film noir today, you think of jazz. But actually, that wasn't the case up until pretty much this year that Peter Gunn came out on TV, 1958. Because in France, actually, a classic film noir came out that same year called Elevator to the Gallows, which is a great film, and that had a soundtrack by the great jazz trumpeter Miles Davis.
Oh yeah.
And that's where that sort of jazz sound came from. But, you know, I, in doing a bit of research on Mancini, I mean, that was the same year that Mancini sort of, you know, turned to jazz for the sound of Peter Gunn. So I think he was a bit of a pioneer there, actually.
It's not trad jazz or anything. But you just can hear the crossover there, or the jazz influence in the Peter Gunn. Is the reverb guitar. Which should be noted that, you know, this is one of the early uses of that as well. I mean, it was sort of being played, I suppose, by some artists, and that sort of surf music hadn't quite come on yet, but he applied that reverberant guitar to the genre of what we call Get Smart or James Bond, the spy, the super agent. And so, so those, like Peter, I should say Get Smart and James Bond as well, their themes that came after that pretty much, you know, you'd have to say Peter Gunn influenced them extremely.
Yeah, no, absolutely. James Bond, that kind of angular guitar sound, yeah, I think it was really pioneering. And I mean, that was because Mancini said that he never really thought about using any other genre because there was just sort of an understanding that that's what the series would sound like, because Peter Gunn, the character, hangs out at a jazz club called Mother's for a lot of the series. And so because he was around jazz, it made sense for the music to be jazz. But, I mean, that's just such a great sound, such a famous sound, that opening riff with guitar and also piano. And believe it or not, but in that original theme, 1958, on the piano was a pianist, a bloke called Johnny Williams, we now know as John Williams, of course, the composer of Star Wars and Jaws and Harry Potter and
lots of movies, yep.
But back in the day, he was just a gigging pianist who happened to be playing, for the entire first year that Peter Gunn was on TV. Whenever you hear a piano, that's the fingers of Johnny Williams at work.
Yeah, very interesting that is too. And look, we've got to remember, Peter Gunn came out in 1959. The electric guitar wasn't very old at that time, so... I mean, in many ways, he embraced this new instrument as well and incorporated it into that song.
Yeah, yep, absolutely. I mean, it wouldn't be until the mid-60s that you get that famous guitar of Ennio Morricone in the Clint Eastwood Dollars trilogy, and that was really one of the other first famous uses. Yeah. So
Even a Dick Dale didn't come until much later.
Yeah. No, absolutely. That real surf sound is... Yeah, so he was pushing the musical envelope.
Martin in Snake Valley says it would have to be the Peter Gunn theme, his favourite Mancini track. Dad played the album for us as kids in the 70s. Yeah, look, and I've got here, didn't Mancini do the baby elephant walk in the movie Hatari? He certainly did.
Hatari! Exclamation mark! Yes.
look, I don't know about the movie, but it's a quirky song and catchy melody, and again, another huge hit for him.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a John Wayne movie about poachers in Africa, but I think a lot of people, especially of my generation, would know the baby elephant walk from its use or possibly overuse in The Simpsons as a piece of parody music, but it's such a great tune. Yeah.
Some people may not know what we're talking about, some of our younger listeners, so we'd better give them a little blast of the baby elephant walk. Here you go. I suppose one thing a tune like that shows us is just how versatile Henry Mancini was. I mean, you compare a track like Peter Gunn or a track like Moon River to that one, certainly there's a bit of diversity there, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely. I think it shows his background as an arranger and as somebody who worked with the Glenn Miller Band, actually, during his army days, as somebody who was all about thinking what the audience was doing and what they would want to hear out of all sorts of different genres. I really admire him as a composer for being able to get inside all sorts of different sounds.
Just one thing I want to mention, I don't know, I believe you're not aware of this, but a note was sent to me a few hours ago, and you're going to love this. Apparently, when Henry Mancini, he came to Australia, well, I don't know if he came to Australia, but he did some work with a very high-profile Australian broadcaster. In 1977, with John Laws, Laws published a number of books of his own on poetry, verse, and he recorded an album, and John Laws and Henry Mancini produced that album together. Henry Mancini did the musical arrangement for it.
Wow, goodness me. That I'll have to see if I can track that down. I'm sure that would be a very memorable collaboration.
Yeah, look, it's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there were, I think, gosh, William Shatner also produced an album of poetry around the same time. I wonder whether there's a point of comparison. That's, of course, Captain James T. Kirk.
I've got here, apparently, Mancini scored the sessions as if it was a mini drama. This is the John Laws record. There were as many as five original melodies, along with transitional scoring. And he met John Laws when he was out in Australia on doing one of his concert tours.
So, wow.
There you go. There's a little one you can check out. He did come to Australia, Henry Mancini, as we just heard. So would have been a good concert to catch, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah, well, tremendous. He was a regular performer, actually, pretty much throughout his career. Even when he was writing all those hit tunes, I think he was still pretty keen to get out on the stage and perform for people, yeah.
Which is a great thing, and, you know, as you say, he wasn't just about the movie soundtracks, because he also released a whole lot of albums in his own right.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, actually, a lot of the music that he's known for, the soundtracks, they weren't released necessarily as soundtrack albums as you might get today. They were often released as sort of, the best of Mancini or, his sort of latest compilation album where he'd have, you know, the Baby Elephant Walk or the Peter Gunn theme alongside a slew of popular hits of the time as well. So, I think his music, even as he released it, was sort of part of a broader kind of, I don't know what you'd call it, kind of like a language of popular music, I think, which makes him quite unique among, well, a lot of film and TV composers, actually, in that approach.
Yeah, true, very true. And in many ways, I suppose, or ask you, how did he influence people like that came after him, people like Bacharach? And the other great movie composers.
Yeah, look, I think, that incorporation of the sort of popular music of the time, and that real ear for melody. I think, you know, just so often he was able to get a popular hit out of a film. That kind of reliance on, people talk about it as sort of almost like downplaying the risk of a movie, because if the movie's a bomb, well, maybe the song might still be a success, as it often was with Mancini. So, you know, that sort of approach, I mean, it continues, I mean, really, up until today, certainly, actually, and he was one of the pioneers of that.
Even strongly through the 70s, think about all those disaster movies that came with their own song.
Yep. That's right. Yeah, I mean, actually, John Williams was a massive disaster movie pioneer in the 70s with, like, The Poseidon Adventure, Earthquake, Towering Inferno, all great films. Well, maybe not great films, but, you know, memorable films.
Memorable is a good way to put it there.
Yeah.
This morning we're talking to Dr. Dan Golding, who's the presenter of Screen Sounds on ABC Classic FM. He's also a senior lecturer in media and communications at Swinburne University, and we're talking all about the life and the work of Henry Mancini. Dan, a couple of these texts I'll get to before you head to the phones. A person wanted to say, apparently the music from the Creature from the Black Lagoon inspired the shark music from Jaws, says Alfie. I've heard that as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, as I said, John Williams was a part of the Mancini crew, so I wouldn't be surprised. He sort of almost did his apprenticeship in a way with Mancini. Hmm. So, you know, yeah, absolutely. I could be. Yeah.
That tension element is certainly something that's there in the music for The Creature from the Black Lagoon. So I'm sure there is a direct lineage or direct connection there. Someone wanted to suggest the music from The Pink Panther. Of course, The Pink Panther was another great movie theme that he got out there.
Yeah.
His work with Blake Edwards, was it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Blake Edwards was one of those old-fashioned Hollywood impresarios, a director, producer. He was Julie Andrews's husband as well, but it was a long-term collaborator of Mancini. In fact, he was the creator of Peter Gunn, the TV series, but also did Breakfast at Tiffany's, and yes, Pink Panther, which is just, I think it's probably, well, I don't know, actually. I was going to say it's his most, Mancini's most, well-known piece today, but I don't know, maybe Peter Gunn's up there as well. There's a few that really he, and of course Moon River. There you go. It's the illustration of the power at work of Mancini. Is I think it's
they're
hard
big
to pick
songs.
Which is his most famous. Yeah, exactly.
They are massive, massive songs. In fact, songs that made it into the collective consciousness of a lot of people on the planet. So you'd have to say he hit the mark with those ones entirely.
Definitely.
G'day, Joseph.
Hi, Michael. Hi, Dan. How are you?
Yeah, good. What do you reckon?
Good. Well, someone already got to my thunder, but I was just going to mention a little detail of the Pink Panther. If you want to plant an earbug in someone's ear, just hum it at home for like 2 days. And I had my sister, who was in 5 years older, so maybe 15, and my mother said, "Stop singing that." Because I can't get it out of my head. And my favorite of all time movie themes, in spite of many, many others, is Moon River. It's heart-wrenching. It just tears your heart out.
It does, doesn't it? It sort of touches you on an emotional level. It's a bit hard to put into words exactly.
Absolutely. But that's all I got. Michael.
Look, what I can give you back, Joseph, is a little bit of an earworm. So here you go, mate. Now, for someone who was a multi-instrumentalist, but originally a flautist or a piccolo player, he certainly had a command of a lot of instruments.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's so easy to forget, in amongst the earworm you know, status of that song, that it's just such a great jazz arrangement as well. It really swings. And I was reading actually that because, of course, that piece of music in the first Pink Panther film plays over an animated opening sequence of a Pink Panther sort of getting up to no good, is that Mancini worked with the animators to provide all these, you know, hit points where there could be exclamations and, you know, where the big band would sort of do a big stab, a big brass stab. And so it was very much inspired by the animation, or working with animation, which is quite a different process to working with live action.
I didn't know that. And, of course, started its own cartoon show, didn't it? There was
That's right. Yeah, I mean, not to mention all the, I mean, I don't know how many Pink Panther films there were in the end, about five or six or seven or something.
Very funny movies too. And that, as you say, that the ride symbol, he's got that swing going on, doesn't he? That sort of swing jazz influence, and just fantastic stuff. And again, another hugely recognisable song that's made its way into most people's heads. I've got a little-known work here by Henry Mancini, a little more classical than his usual work, is his orchestral suite Beaver Valley 37 in three movements, The River, Black Snow and The Sons of Italy. It's autobiographically, and it depicts scenes from his childhood in Pennsylvania. It's very evocative and attractive and perhaps a little different from his usual work. That's from Michael Edwards.
Yeah, well, I mean, some, you know, some film composers, of course, you know, had aspirations to write concert hall music that's not necessarily for the screen. And a lot of them did, you know, because of their status, managed to write that and get that kind of performed. So it's, I mean, great that he had that opportunity. And it sounds like it's a very personal piece as well. So, yeah, fantastic.
I got here, I heard you mention Moon River. Check out Elton John's version online. Not a coroner like a crooner like Andy Williams or Jerry Butler, but his treatment of the song and his orchestral arrangement and the keyboard skills are breathtaking. My favourite version, without a doubt, says Steve. I'll have to check that one out. Are you familiar with Elton John doing Moon River?
No, I'm not. That's quite a pickup. I'll have to check that out. But I mean, so many people. It's one of those songs that just, you know, everybody's done a cover of. So I mean, well, I can imagine him doing a great version. I'll have to check it out.
I reckon they'd make a good punk band and make a good cover version of Moon River. Hey, Gordon. Good morning.
Oh, g'day. Have Matt Munro had the big hit of Moon River, I think. Look. Peter Gunn, in the early 60s, when I was just tuning into jazz, I joined the Navy band and jazz was, we were all sort of moving. The Peter Gunn album, I bought that in the early 60s and it seemed to be way ahead of its time. Not so much the actual theme with the bass guitar, that's terrific, but some of the other tracks, Smothers Go to Mothers. They're really catchy, and for an introduction into jazz for me, it was quite important. You know, I went on to listen to other jazz people, but I picked up a copy of that vinyl album some years ago, and I've just been looking for it this morning, but I'll find it later. And it was a classic album.
So it wasn't just the Peter Gunn song?
No, it wasn't just the Peter Gunn song. Oh, the whole track is catchy, really catchy, and I think ahead of its time.
I could not agree more. I think there's so much good music from the whole series. And Fallout is another track of a favorite of mine from the series, that great walking double bass jazz style with a flute improvising over the top. Really, really iconic stuff for kind of creeping criminals and scenes of that kind of nature. Yeah, really, really good stuff.
Sounds like an album worth picking up, Gordon.
Oh, it is. It's a classic. It's a classic album. Oh. Definitely.
All right. Yep. I might have to check that one out. I think I might have to add that one to my shopping list. Dan? Because, you know, love a bit of that jazz. I wonder how he influenced some of the crossover jazz artists that came after him. I'm talking about people like Vince Guaraldi or a Dave Brubeck, who's probably a little bit before him. But you know what I mean? The other those other sort of jazz swing musicians and composers that had hits in the popular charts.
Yeah, that's well. Yeah, I mean, around the time of Peter Gunn, it was the West Coast, as they call it, style of jazz that was popular, which was people you know, such as Dave Brubeck that you mentioned. So yeah, definitely same era, right era. Yeah.
I wonder if the Wrecking Crew got hold of many of his songs. They probably did, didn't they? I would have thought the Wrecking Crew were involved somewhere along the line in a Mancini song.
Yeah, no, I don't know, but they're absolutely right genre, approach to music, I think. Yeah, it could be.
All right, here we go. I've got John. G'day, John.
Hello.
You've got here that you played with Mancini.
Yeah, I toured with him when the first time he came out here. Mm-hmm. He came for Crawford Productions, where they put the show on. It was called The Concert Sounds of Henry Mancini. Yeah, but of course, Peter Gunn and Baby Elephant Walk, they were based on the blues chords, you know. That's why they had that jazz flavour. Right. But he was a great bloke to work with, you know.
So that's amazing. So you got to know him a little bit? And
yeah, well, what happened, there were two acts. The first act, I think, was the Serendipity Singers, I think. That was the word. It was a group of young girls and boys, and they sang songs. And, of course, they didn't require the conductor, and they didn't need a guitar player because they were all guitars and banjo players. And I didn't play the first part of the show, and I just played the part with the Mancini part of the show, and we used to talk a bit because we weren't doing anything, you know, and I didn't get to know him personally, but we used to talk, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he was a great fellow, and of course, one of those, he wrote a marvellous song called Two for the Road, but I'm not a specialist on Henry Mancini, but it was one of the, you know, I enjoyed that job really very much.
And look, John, I've got to say, it's not often you speak to someone who played with Henry Mancini, so I'm a little bit taken aback. Probably Dan is a little bit too, I think.
Yeah.
Well, I used to do a lot of orchestral playing, like theatre shows. I also did an opera at the Opera House called The Rise and Fall of the City of Mahagoni. It's nothing to do with Mancini, right, but that's the sort of playing I used to get but now there's no playing anywhere.
Yeah, I've got to ask you, were the guitar parts very hard to play, very difficult?
Well, look, I learned to play guitar as a reader. I read music, you know, It wasn't hard, but it wasn't easy because you got to produce what's written there, you know?
Yeah, sure.
It wasn't something you get up and you have a go by yourself. When you're with an orchestra, it's all, the parts are written. You have to adhere to what's written. Peter Gunn, you know, the guitar and bass play that figure.
Yeah.
And a repetitive figure, but yeah. Anyway, I did like it, and
I've got to ask you just quickly, John. What sort of guitar were you playing?
Oh, I played a Fender in that show. Okay. Yeah, a Stratocaster.
Right.
Yeah, I have an L5, an acoustic guitar, and in the contract it said play acoustic and electric guitar. When he saw the acoustic guitar, he said, "Don't worry, I'll bring it. Bringing that." He said, "No one will hear it." So I just played the Fender.
It'd have to be a Strat, wouldn't it? Hey, nice one, John. That's just a great story. Thank you for sharing it with us.
Good on you. Thanks.
Thanks. Cheers. That's not bad, eh, Dan?
Oh, that's very impressive. I love the little tidbit as well that it was Crawford Productions that put on the concert because they were one of the mainstays of Australian TV at the time. They did the Sullivans and Matlock and Homicide and all of that. So to be putting on music concerts by Henry Mancini, well, I guess it makes sense.
With actually Mancini being in the band.
Yeah.
If you don't mind. G'day, Jason.
I read an article some years ago and that Mancini, and I think it was Johnny Mercer, wrote Moon River around Audrey Hepburn's voice because she only had an octave and a half range.
Okay.
So the whole song apparently was written around her voice. Do you know if there's any truth to that?
Dan, you know anything about that?
Yeah, that's absolutely right, yeah. And not only that, but she fought for the song to be included in the final film because one of the producers, apparently, there was a lukewarm test screening and the producer tried to get a cut and she said, "Words to the effect of, over my dead body, will you remove this song?"
Well, she was proved right in the end, wasn't she?
Spot on.
How could you hear that song and not recognise that it was a monster? I don't get that at all. But, yeah, very, very interesting there as well. So, yeah, Audrey Hepburn, as you say. She was a big part of that movie and good to see her giving him a bit of support when he needed it. And I've got here the love theme song from Romeo and Juliet. I decided to learn it on the piano. That was another magnificent song. That one, I think, earned him an Academy Award, didn't it?
Well, the Romeo and Juliet is actually an interesting story because that was written by another composer, another Italian composer actually, called Nino Rota. But Mancini did a cover of it, which was extremely popular and got in all the charts at the time. But I guess it goes back to what I was saying before about his music being released in these compilations of his own stuff and other people's tunes and kind of show tunes and what was called light music. I don't think we really talk about that genre of light music anymore, but Mancini was definitely all part of that. So, yeah, it's not a Mancini original, but his version of it is very, very well known.
Great arrangement. Hey, morning, Jennifer.
Oh, yes, hi. The LP, the vinyl, the music from Peter Gunn, I have that, and it has a blurb by Blake Edwards on the back. And side one, Peter Gunn, Saw the Blue, The Brothers Go to Mother's, Greenville, Sessions at Peter's Pad, Soft Sounds, etc. You can buy a lot of these LPs, they're reproducing them. You know, this one, it says on the bottom, printed 2016.
Okay.
And I got that in Red Eye Records in York Street. I'm probably not allowed to say that. But anyway.
That's right. Look, are you talking CD there or vinyl?
No, vinyl. Okay. Vinyl. Oh. Yeah, the vinyl. So, you know, if you can buy these little record players, just a little cheap one, just a few hundred dollars, and you can, if you're not over particular about the quality of the sound, if you're a 1960s person, that's all we had, those little fold-up portable things, and you can buy these LPs, not overpriced at all, and it's fun.
I can tell you, lovers of vinyl, very particular or very fussy about their sound these days, Jennifer.
Well, I'm a lover of vinyl, and I'm not overly. I mean, the LP itself is good. So if you are, you can still buy good players. You can pay a lot of money. So if you want the LP, you can still get it.
Yeah, look, and I'm sure it's available on CD as well. So. Well worth a look out for. Good on you, Jennifer. Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Bye. Listen, we mentioned Johnny Mercer before. We should pay tribute a little bit to the lyricist who he worked with quite a bit because, you know, that is a big part of the equation. What was their relationship like?
I think, you know, I mean, Johnny Mercer was such a well-known lyricist as well and had such a big impact on the world of music. So, I mean, they work together on across quite a lot of films. I think probably Moon River is their most famous collaboration. But yeah, like, you know, just one of these long running. I think they were put together by a studio originally, the film studio. But you know, just really, really fruitful collaboration. Yeah.
At a time, you know, when really there was a lot of great music coming out of Hollywood and coming out of America, and as you say, so that light music genre, which you know, still very popular these days and still getting lots of airplay. So it obviously, you know, was something that was around for a while to stay, and obviously touched a lot of people in a big way.
Yeah. Days of Wine and Roses was another really big hit of their collaboration together, Mancini and Johnny Mercer. But also, for the film of the same name with Jack Lemmon. So, yeah, great song.
Now, you, as we mentioned before, you're the presenter of Screen Sounds on ABC Classic FM. I believe that your program next week, is it next Monday, has a bit of a tribute to Mancini.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I usually don't play a lot of jazz because obviously the network is ABC Classic. But yeah, this coming Monday, I'm doing a special of jazz at the movies, which will include a bit of Mancini because how could you not really? But that's because ABC Classic is also it's part of the network with ABC Jazz, and Jazz is doing the first Jazz 100, where people are allowed to vote next Monday, actually.
I've heard about this.
For their favourite jazz artist.
You got a tip for us?
Oof. There'll be so many that'll be hard to go past. I reckon Duke Ellington's probably going to be up there. I did have to place a vote for him myself, but I think I can't wait. I mean, you know, unlike because of course ABC Classic's done many countdowns now, so we get a sense of what might do well there. But this is the first one, so I think it's really anybody's guess.
Good to hear Classic FM getting their fingers dirty, Dan.
Yeah. look, I've been looking forward to getting some jazz in the program for a long time now because I love people like Mancini, so yeah. I can't wait.
Congratulations. Great to talk to you. Thanks for your time.
Cheers. Absolute pleasure.
That's Dr. Dan Golding, presenter of Screen Sounds on ABC Classic FM.